What number is this, Chip?
Episode number 19, The New Monkeys.
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know. Zilch.
You're listening to Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
On today's episode, we're discussing The New Monkeys. It was the 80s. Everything old was new again. Almost every TV show and movie property was being remade at a fast pace. In 1986, after almost 20 years of obscurity, Mickey, Davey, and Peter were packing arenas across the country. Big business got together and decided, you know, we could do that Monkees thing again. After a familiar audition and marketing process, Marty Ross, Dino Kovas, Jared Chandler, and Larry Saldus were introduced to the world as the New Monkees. With an album and a syndicated TV series, which followed, most diehard Monkey fans hated the group on general principle. How dare someone try to take the place of the Monkees? A few Monkees fans gave them a shot and liked what they heard. Unfortunately, the vast majority of America's youth simply ignored them altogether. Within a year, the New Monkees had become little more than a footnote to a footnote. Their story has never really been told until today. Today I'm joined by Craig Smith. Let's get your thoughts on the New Monkees. And the first thing I want to say is we're not trying to get anyone to become New Monkees fans.
Right.
We're here to talk today about the comparisons between the New Monkees and the old Monkees. And I think it would be hard to do a documentary about Coca-Cola without doing a story on New Coke, right?
Absolutely.
And that's kind of what we're here for. I want to talk to you from a more of a musical standpoint right now.
Okay.
What can you tell me about your thoughts on the New Monkees album?
Well, I purchased it at the age of 14. Mm-hmm. I watched the series. I was not opposed to any of it at that age. And there were friends of mine who were, so it wasn't a thing where it was derided depending on what sort of Generation Monkees fan you were. You know, it kind of left a bad taste in people's mouth just because of the name. But I watched the episodes, and the episodes were very, very silly. They were exactly what you would expect. But the songs, I always thought that the music was solid. I liked the fact that, much like the Monkees episodes, you would have music videos interspersed in the episodes. Sometimes it would be a different version of the song on the album. I loved that kind of stuff. And I thought that the songs were all great. I thought it was a really solid album. I still do. I still play it from time to time.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised at actually how good the album is. And like I said, we're not trying to make anyone a New Monkees fan, but we will play bits of this album as we go through it. Are there any standout tracks in your mind?
There are. I love the cover of Boy Inside the Man.
So long, so long, so long he's been away. So long, so long, so long he's back again. When I took 17, we had passion, we had dreams. We fought the love we're fighting for. Something holy, something more. When I turned 21, we were outside on the run. When I walked out with my girl, we went halfway around the world. Yeah, come on. I dreamed that I saw her standing there, and running for the boy inside the man. I was hit hard by a light so bright it burned, and all at once I knew she'd understand.
Which I think is great. I also I love the song Affection, and I always did.
Yeah.
And at the end of one of the later New Monkeys episodes, it was one of the last, I believe, there's an acoustic version that's just absolutely great. And yeah, those two were always the ones for me that I really liked.
Now, if I were to ask you to describe the show, what could you tell me about the show?
80s, Ken. 80s.
What can you tell us about the concept of the show of the New Monkeys?
I have to tell you, Ken, it has been years since I've seen it. Mm-hmm. I did have all the episodes on VHS, and I tried to transfer them some time ago, and the tape was just shot. So I don't remember any storylines. I remember some of the jokes, surprisingly. I might have seen each episode maybe two or three times years ago, and some of the jokes still have stuck with me. I remember there being a diner where I think they hung out, but I don't remember any of the plots. Kind of like crazy, like Saved by the Bell type visual effects. Like think the opening credits of Saved by the Bell. The New Monkeys was pretty much the same way. It was, if I remember, the opening sequence being very similar.
Yeah.
And, you know, floating heads and upside down things and just a lot of color, a lot of lightning bolts, a lot of that sort of visual stimulation. It was a very fast-paced show from the little that I do remember about it. Mm-hmm. There would be no mistaking the time period it was from. That I do remember.
It had a lot of similarities to the Monkees, but there were many things that were vastly different. Like, for example, it seemed like they were stuck in that mansion.
The mansion. I totally forgot about the mansion. Like I said, it's been... I tend to remember the songs and the music videos that they had. I remember that they're... I seem to recall that the video in one of the episodes for What I Want, which was the single...
Yes.
I think it was like in a pool hall or near a pool table, something like that. Yeah, those are the kind of things from the episodes that I really tend to remember. But now that you mention the mansion, that's a huge part.
Because within the mansion, it seemed like they were there, and they could go down to the diner, which seemed to be a diner of its own world.
So wait, was the diner in the mansion?
Yes.
Okay.
And then they would like open up a door and go down a hallway that wouldn't have been there before, which would lead them elsewhere.
No, have you seen the whole run, Ken?
At the time when it aired, it was something that I would catch if I could, you know.
Right.
I remember not liking it instantly because I had to not like it. You know what I mean? It was like, I'm not supposed to like this. But I did enjoy some of...
You were one of those guys.
Yeah, I did enjoy the comedy, you know. But the big difference between the New Monkees and the Old Monkees, if you will, is that it was more like Saturday Night Live and Pee Wee Herman than it was the Monkees.
Accurate. Totally accurate.
They would have like these things where a guy would go fishing and talk to a fish. It would be like a little short film.
Right, right.
And they would have all these really artsy, weird, off-putting comedy bits.
Yeah.
And
so,
you know,
so like, they were interspersed throughout?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so, like, there would be a main plot, and then you would have something weird like this.
You guys, I've lost the brakes!
Oh, great, now we're ready to go.
All right, everybody, keep your hands in the car.
Oh, man, this is ridiculous.
Welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, to the New Words with Stiv Herniak show. And now, your host, Stiv Herniak.
Thank you. This week's word is Callipygian. It's used to describe well-developed or finely honed buttocks. 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 Look it up. Check them out. Callipygian. Until next week, remember, words are our friends. Choose them carefully.
And then you would come back, they'd do a song, the plot would resolve a little bit more, and then they'd do another video.
Okay.
Right. So it was almost like Pee Wee Herman's meets MTV.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
So they really weren't trying to be the Monkees any more than they were trying to be Pee Wee Herman. I think they were trying to be their own thing.
To me, it always felt like a project that was doomed to fail just because of the name. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if... You know, and this is something that, you know, everybody that's ever talked about the New Monkees has said, if they had a different name, I mean, you can't blame them for being manufactured for television. The Monkees were. You know, there was nothing about them that wasn't, you know, that was offensive in comparison to the monkeys, other than
the name.
The name, and that it was kind of, you know, put together with that blueprint in mind. But the monkeys was put together with A Hard Day's Night in mind. So it's just going down the line. I have to wonder that if it was not based on the name monkeys, if it would have been better received. And I mean, it's tough for a band if you're trying to get a hit outside of the TV show. The New Monkeys is just an odd moniker. Like, absolutely, that's not going to help you with radio. It's not going to help you sell concert tickets. It already casts a strange kind of light over you.
Right.
So those were the things that I was always interested in. Like, would these guys have been bigger had the concept not touched the monkeys as much as it did?
Well, as hot as the monkeys were, if Strayburt would have been smart, they would have taken the money, changed the name, and said from the producers of the monkeys, and because people would have already recognized the template.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it could have maybe worked. Craig, how yes. do you feel that the album stacks up against what the monkeys were producing at the time? We had Pull It basically around the same amount of time, wouldn't you say?
It was. Are you trying to get me in trouble, Ken?
No, I'm not trying to get you in trouble, but I think that we need to talk about, I mean, a lot of people will slag on Pull It for the 80s production, and if, you know, there's a lot, you could slag on the New Monkeys album for the 80s production, so.
Right. I was a huge Pull It fan when I was 14, when the album came out. I loved it, and it was of its time, as was the New Monkeys album. I have a hard time now with Pull It, only because, like, there are some people that will just be like, Pull It is awful. I don't think that. I don't feel that. I do feel like Pull It would have been so much better had it been arranged a little better. Like, I would have loved, and this never would have happened, but I would have loved in 1987 for the Three Monkeys to do a Headquarters.
Chip Douglas back and...
Right. Yeah, or just something that was, you know, more than, you know, these really processed, you know, electronic backing tracks, you know, those really, and I hate the word, but cheesy, like 80s synths. That's what really mires this album. It's the 80s production. They're not bad songs. I mean, you want to hear those voices against something different. You want to hear the voices against something that's a little more garage, maybe a little more raw. The thing that I loved about 1987 Monkeys and the tour in particular is that Mickey went from like the Simmons pads to now playing a full drum set.
Yes.
Davey had his spot doing I'll Love You Forever where he's playing guitar. Uh-huh. Peter obviously played guitar through the whole set. They could have done more instrumentation on Pull It. And that's always been my problem posthumously with Pull It, is that aside from the couple guitar tracks that Peter did, it was just them going in and laying down vocals on these tracks that were already done. They had absolutely, I'm speculating, little to do with the creative process outside of, you know, throwing vocals on. And I would have expected more in 1987. In comparison, I really have to say I'll take the New Monkeys album over Pull It. I feel it's stronger. I feel the songs are stronger. I feel it's more, it feels to me, even as 80s as it is, as more band effort to me. And so that's appealing to me. I think it's a really strong record. Does it suffer from some 80s things? Absolutely.
You can hear the Hairspray.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, yes. And Dino had a lot of it. but yeah, I still think it's a strong album. I actually found a copy on vinyl probably about a year ago, sealed. And it was the first time that I'd listened to it in a while. And I was struck by how great it is. I mean, there's just some great pop songs on there. And I'm not ashamed to say that I enjoy it.
Same here. Well, today on the show, we have Marty Ross of the New Monkeys, who is on the phone with us, and he's going to sit down, and we're gonna surprise a lot of people with some of the things that we're going to learn during this episode. At least I was very shocked by some of the things that I found out. And it's sad because these guys wound up in the same mess that the other monkeys found themselves in. And it's weird, you know, Craig, that there are 8 guys who have been dubbed monkeys.
That's absolutely true.
By Schneider, Rafelson, and Steve Blauner.
There you go.
So for Monkees fans, we want you to sit back and give this an open mind. You might learn a few things about the business, and you're going to find out that basically the same rules still applied in Hollywood.
New unknowns are hoping that lightning strikes twice. They will become an all-new group called the New Monkees, and we're going to meet all four of them in a few minutes, and we'll try to sort out the old monkeys from the new
monkeys, right.
And the chimpanzees from the baboons. And
now, after 20 years, four new monkeys will be making the scene in a new comedy series to begin in the fall of 87. Some 3,500 young hopefuls auditioned for the roles, and we have the final four: Jared Chandler, Marty Ross, Larry Saltis, and Dino Kovas. Did I get all the names right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys went through a lot, I know, to get these roles. Why did you want to be a monkey? I'll start with you, Jared.
Well, I'd be lying if I said I didn't just want the part, but that'd be a good opportunity because in the 60s, you know, that generation had their monkeys, so the 80s, I guess we should have ours.
Yeah. Marty, how'd you get into it?
Well, I figured my parents called me and said, you know what, we're not sending you any more money. And I said, well,
get a job.
I had to get a job. So I figured, television sounds like the right kind of place for me.
All right, Larry?
Basically, it was just my parents' decision, really. I mean, they saw the advertisement on MTV.
Really?
And came home one day and there were two tickets on the table in New York. So,
wow.
You know, it wasn't, when they first mentioned it to me, I said, no way, I'll never make it. And they surprised
me. And here you are.
Here I am.
Dino? What do you say, Dino?
I was getting tired of delivering pizzas. And
yeah?
So same as Marty, I said, yeah, I think showbiz is for me.
That's right.
And then Larry's parents gave Dino two tickets.
That's right, he gave two tickets. Okay. Now, one of the criticisms of the first Monkees is that a lot of them started out not playing any musical instruments, and they said, oh, they're not really musicians. How many are you? You all have some musical background, right?
I can play guitar.
You play guitar.
I play guitar.
Okay.
I play the drums.
You're the drums.
I play bass.
And you're the bass. Mm. Now, but you're essentially have an acting background.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I've been doing theater since I was little, in like community theater, and I've been living in Hollywood, and I did two features recently. I played music in high school and stuff. I always had a band going, so
all
it's
right.
Fun to do both.
So you do have the musical background.
Oh yeah.
Now, you've got the acting background. Besides playing music, this is a TV show and you do have to act. How nervous are you all that don't have the acting background about acting?
Well, Jonah, back home, I did a video show back home. And so it's like I've been in front of the camera for a couple of years now. It's called Back Porch Video. Back home.
Back home?
I watched it all the time.
Yeah, that's right. Larry, are you a little nervous about it?
Sure I am, but you know, heck, being just out of high school, it's, no, I'm not really used to it.
There are going to be comparisons. There have got to be comparisons made, you know, from the new Monkees. Are you concerned about, do you guys think you resemble, I mean, if people already started to say, hey, this is Mickey and this is, who do you think, who would you pick out? Do you resemble somebody?
Do I resemble
someone?
I mean,
someone? Are you personality-wise, have you been chosen to be one of the guys in the group?
No, but,
I would resemble anybody.
I don't think so, but, I mean, I when I was younger, it was like, I really got interested in Mickey Dolenz's looks.
Oh, really? Oh, so you've
just
been influenced.
Just the way he was. Yeah, I was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a monkey fan.
Yeah. Have you met any of the monkeys?
No.
Have any of you met any of the monkeys?
No, we'd like to.
We'd like to.
You'd like to?
We'd like
very
to play
much.
With them. That'd be great.
That'd be
or just play together.
Yeah, play together.
Do you think you resemble any of them?
I've been told.
I mean, in character even.
In character?
Who are they going to say, hey, this is the one who's really Mickey or... Davy Jones.
I think I'd probably be closest to Michael.
To Michael? How about you?
If you're going to make comparisons, but of course we don't have to.
But of course we're not going to do that, right? But are you concerned about the comparisons?
Not really. We all have our independent personalities, and hopefully, you know, we can work it out and have a good time.
That's funny.
Make
Dino just said that you're Davy.
You said I'm Davy?
I lied.
We call him Davy.
Oh, no.
Yeah? Well, good luck with this. A lot of fun.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. We'll be back. Wolfgang Puck's Pumpkin Ravioli right after that. Say that five times fast. How about you?
If you're going to make comparisons, but of course we don't have to.
But of course we're not going to do that, right? But are you concerned about the comparisons?
In Los Angeles, Warner Brothers Records signed the new Monkees to a worldwide record deal. And in New York, they had a spectacular press conference.
It was all a lot of fun, a Cinderella story. But soon things would change as the boys' lives would be influenced by agents, studio heads, and laugh tracks.
I'm going to do a little all editing here, and I'm going to go.
You're not going to edit me, are you? Please, no.
No. Not like that.
Hi, this is Ken Mills, and I'm talking to Ken. Wait a minute. It's me talking to you. All right. Hi, this is Marty Ross from the New Monkees, and you're listening to Zilch.
Ladies and gentlemen, Marty Ross.
Yay! I mean, get your rocks ready.
I want to thank you for being on the show. And, of course, it is a Monkees podcast, and I understand the trepidation when I first contacted you about this. You were kind of like, well, how's this going to work? I assure you this is not, we are not here to bury you, bash you, make fun of you. If anything, from what I know of your sense of humor, you're the person that will be making the most fun of yourself.
So I appreciate you asking me on this. I'm a great admirer of the Monkees, so, you know. Anybody that wanted to be part of the New Monkees would probably be somebody that was in love and had great admiration for the original Monkees, and that was exactly how I got involved with it, was I was asked to be part of that, and I said, really? They're going to do New Monkees? Gee, that sounds kind of weird, but I'll try.
Well, let's go back a little bit further. Let's talk a little bit about Marty Ross and his love of the Monkees and where you first came into the Monkees, how you became aware of them. Just kind of tell your little Monkees story, if you will.
I remember the Monkees. I was 9 years old. I got a transistor radio for my ninth birthday. Let's see, 1966.
Wow.
And the first song that I turned on was Last Train to Clarksville. That's the first time I ever heard that song. It was the first song on it. And, you know, I didn't know then. It was Louis Shelton playing that riff and that song. And I immediately said, that is such the coolest song, and I went out to the store and I bought that and a couple Beatles singles, and I spun the Last Train to Clarksville, and the other side was Take a Giant Step. For the whole summer, my parents got so sick of it, and well, that's all I would play, and I'd just play it and play it. And then one day, this record got lost, and I don't know what happened to it. And I went, "Where's my Monkey single?" My parents said, "They don't know." Said, but my friend Dennis had been over. So I went over to my friend Dennis's house, who lived across the alleyway, and there it was on his turntable, and it was Last Train to Clarksville. And I looked at him, I said, "Why did you take my single?" He said, "That's mine." He says, "No, it's not. It's mine. I recognize. You know, everybody has their own little wears and tears on their little 45.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So you can tell what's yours and what's not." And he said, "But that's my name on it." He says, "You just wrote your name on that. It's not yours. It's mine." So I always remember the battle of Last Train to Clarksville. I went out and bought another one. And at every night, I'd put it in a little cupboard.
To make sure it was safe.
And keep my records safe because my next-door neighbor was stealing my records.
Now, were you aware at the time that it was also a TV show?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, the thing is, it was the time of Batman and
Star Trek and all that
Star
stuff.
You know, these shows were just incredibly wonderful expanding opportunities for young children. And it's, you know, it was a great, great thing, and I would never ever take those terms back. I actually quite remember that my personality, I owe to it, a lot of it is these shows where you can act completely irreverently or irreverent.
Uh-huh.
And the Monkees were our pre-Monty Python, and they were our television. They were really a hold of, you know, A Hard Day's Night was what they were taken after, but we didn't have Hard Day's Night. It was only shown the one time in the theater, and you never saw it again. It was only a memory.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember it being on TV. I don't remember, you know, it coming back to theaters. It came back. I remember one time in 1968 in my hometown in Illinois, and it played at the Midway Theater. And everybody went to go see it because a lot of people didn't see it the first time.
Yeah, a lot of people forget those days. Like, for example, if it were the Monkees on TV, That was pretty much the only time you saw it until it reran. The same with Hard Day's Night. Like you mentioned, it was in the theater, and I remember seeing it for the first time on a PBS channel in the 70s.
That's,
you know,
about right. It would have been starting to do that then. And it's interesting to note that what really lifted us through the memories of the TV shows were the music and the singles and the albums.
Uh-huh.
That's what you have in your possession in 1966, 67, and that's what you can play over and over again. But you can't watch the TV show or watch the movie or do that. It's just not available. It's not the technology of the time.
Right. So make no mistake about it, folks. This guy is a first-generation Monkees fan. He loved them back then. He still loves them today. So in the 80s, the original Monkees had a resurgence, at which point Bob Rafelson and Bert Schneider were trying to think of a way to capitalize on this, and they hooked up with Steve Blauner, who was a former partner of the original Monkees producers, and they, instead of staying with the Ray Burt thing, started a company called Straybird Productions, and they started a cattle call kind of audition thing, and you answered that.
Yes, but not the cattle call. I was invited to go audition in Los Angeles, a called audition. I was asked to do that there, and I thought it was kind of strange. It was on a little, it was in a, you know, in a production module, otherwise known as a motorhome with a side door. And you walked up there, and I saw the logo of the Monkees on the side of the door with a marker above it that said new.
Wow.
And I thought, and I walked in there, and the person before me, I remember, I heard from inside there, I heard the cheer up, sleepy, and that was about it. And he walked out, and I said, God, I've got to change my plan, because I can sing, and I can do this, but it's probably not what they're looking for at this point. So I walked in there, and I sat down, and they said, so what brings you, what makes you want to be a new Monkee? And I said, who said I did? I was told, I was asked to come here by my manager, and I was asked to come in here, and I don't think you guys are really serious about doing the new, calling this New Monkees. And they said, we don't think it's going to be called the New Monkees. We're going to try to call it something else. We're just doing this for the auditions, and we're going to try to make it something copacetic for the American public later on. But for now, yes, it's called the New Monkees, because that way it has identity. I went, oh, okay, I get that. And this, I was done with the interview, and they asked me back. So I was called again to say that I was down to the... I mean, literally in Hollywood, it's like this terrible withdrawal of some sort of sword from your chest when they sit there and they tell you, you know, that you're not one of them, and you're not one of them. And I got a call saying I was one of 22.
Wow.
Out of the 8 or 5, 6, whatever, 80 million that tried out, I don't know. And so I was one of 22, and then they called me up and said I was one of 9. And then I was one of 5. Says, but they had a problem. They weren't looking for 5. They were looking for 4. So I said, what does that mean? We have to do a kind of a talent thing on the set of the new Gidget.
The new Gidget.
Yeah. On the set of the new Gidget, we did a free-for-all improv thing in front of cameras and lights. And that was when I was told I was the 4th pick. They had the other 3 down. They didn't have me down. They didn't have the other down. But what's interesting is that the guy that was in the final 5 or 7, one of the guys that was in the final 5 or 7, turned out that he got turned down for it, and we all felt bad. Everybody felt bad, because we were getting to be a team. We're starting to work as a unit, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's too many guys. And that guy turned out to be one of the founders of the Blue Man Group, so I think he did okay.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever been put out there, and I'm not going to mention his name, because I don't want him to get bothered with questions about New Monkees, but
right.
You can figure it out. It's one of the original guys. So.
Well, you were in a band called The Wigs. And
yeah,
were,
yeah, that's another band I was in.
Yeah, and you were also multi-instrumentalist, shall we say. And you had been signed to CBS Records, correct?
Sure. Well, that was a period in my life where, you know, I came to Los Angeles to make it big in the rock and roll world.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I figured I was the only one doing it, because nobody else comes to Los Angeles for that.
Right.
The weird thing about it was that our band was doing pretty well. We had done a film called My Chauffeur. For some strange reason, the music supervisor loved us so much that he had us write 8 songs for the movie. So it's a little bit of a minor cult film from 1986, 1985, and you can see us in all our glory in that film.
I remember that.
It's a Deborah Foreman. It was Deborah Foreman, who was Valley Girl, and it's got a lot of excellent character actors you know, Howard Hessman, E.G. Marshall. There was a Sam Jones with his flash.
Yeah, it was definitely a creature of its time, shall we say. You gotta love the 80s if you're gonna check out My Chauffeur.
Well, sure, and Penn and Teller in their first feature film.
Yes, and how many feature films can claim that?
yeah, that's true. So there was that. We were doing pretty well, and the thing about it was we got a management team that wanted to handle us, and we started using this management team, and the management team was the one that steered me towards the New Monkeys thing, and it kind of got a little messy there for a while because I was in the Wigs and in the New Monkeys, and they told me that I couldn't be in any other band.
Uh-huh.
And I thought to myself, after all these years, I'm going, why couldn't I just have had my band play sometimes on the weekends somewhere else? You know, I mean, there was no reason why that couldn't happen. In fact, it might have helped the establishment of the musicianship of the band.
Right.
They were doing things that were almost, now upon reflection, exactly like they did it the first time. And,
right.
You know, there's only two things that didn't happen. Was one was success, and the other one was the luck wasn't on our side.
Right.
You know, and if I go back to like a song like Affection, which is a kind of a dark song, it almost matches like the kind of Last Train to Clarksville mentality. Because when I was first listening to Last Train to Clarksville as a kid, I had no idea what I was singing.
Right.
I had no idea. And what a ballsy thing to do, you know, to come out with these preteen guys that are engineered to be Sweet 16, Teen Magazine, this kind of popularity, that fan base, and your first song is about going to Vietnam.
Yeah.
That is absolutely maybe one of the most remarkable feats of top 10 hit songs that you've ever known, because it was just, I never quite got it, but it worked, so who questions success?
Exactly.
Hey, so I came up with something here. Listen to this. I want to know if you tell me whether or not you think you've heard this before, okay?
Okay.
All right. Because it sounds to me like I've heard it before, but I'm trying to...
That's a great riff.
I think it's... You know what? If nobody else has done it, I'm stealing it.
Yeah, that would be a good lick right there, yeah. I think that has legs, you know.
I don't think that when the Monkees were interviewed or anything. Tell us about Last Train to Clarksville. Oh yeah, it's about getting shot up and coming back with the shitty Vietnam health, you know, coming back and not being able to get your leg healed. And
or I'm moving to Canada and I'll never be able to come back here.
Yeah, see, it's that a draft dodger thing, isn't it?
One or the other.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ever coming home. That if it was a draft dodger thing, that it might be the lyric of coming home would be that he's still thinking it that where he's Clarksville,
uh-huh.
You know, or where he's going to is it's a fascinating subject. I always thought that it'd be worth a little talk on in itself, you know, with somebody more qualified that was involved with the writing, or you know, somebody that was involved with recording something to talk about that particular song. Because it's worth a show to me, because it does have, it is fascinating that the Monkees did that song. That sounds like something, and it's so early for a protest song.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's right there with Barry McGuire, and you know, it's right there with the early ones. What's that, 66?
Yeah, well, it would have had been written about 65, 66, and you know, so yeah, absolutely. Don't touch me. Going back to what we were saying, there was these thousands of people trying out, and you were basically picked to be in the process, so you didn't have to go through the long line and all that. When did you find out that they were actually going to use the name The New Monkees?
After I was picked, we went to New York for an announcement, and we announced as The New Monkees. You know, I mean, we're talking about a week before I was announced as one of the... I was found out I was one of the guys. I mean, literally, no, it wasn't a week. It was 3 days. 3 days before that, I was in my apartment trying to figure out a way to, you know, to pay the rent and figure out what gig we were going to do in the band, and just a whole different life. And then I'm told that in 3 days I've got to go to New York City. I'm flying first class. I'm going to be staying at the Ritz-Carlton with the view, with the suite looking over Central Park. I'm going to be on the Today Show or some morning show, and we're going to announce at the Hard Rock Cafe a world press conference. And all that stuff came in, and after I was in my room, and I was at the end of the night, and I called my girlfriend, and I called my parents. I literally said, it was my mom that said, are they calling? Is it the name of the band, the New Monkees? And I said, you know, I hadn't stopped to think about it, but I think it might be.
Wow.
So I didn't really realize, you know, because things were just so fast. I was riding in the center of the hurricane. I had no idea what this was going to be called, but I think it was Dino that came up, and we all went out later on after that first day, and we said, what are we going to do, you know, about this name thing? And we said, well, I don't know. It appeared to be okay. I mean, from where we were sitting, it seemed like everybody loved the idea, because that's what we were being told. That's what was in our faces all the time. Mm-hmm. And New Monkees, great. Oh, yeah, makeup artists. New Monkees, what a great idea. New Monkees, no one, not even, you know, no one told us ever that they thought it was a bad idea. Little did we know that there was going to be this storm surrounding us, of which they tried to prevent us from seeing for the longest time, until we finally found out from mailbags, you know, later on, that were filled with hate mail, and, you know, we were being doled out, you know, 80 to 100 letters, and there was sacks outside of the studio that were not kind and friendly.
I want you to tell that story, how you're in this fame bubble where you're being isolated from any of the negative press. You're going to the office on Monday after, you know, you get your little vacation from working 7 days a week. You get like a couple hours off on Sunday. You come in, and Monday is mail day, correct?
Yeah, it was a time for mail. We'd get mail. We had two trailers that were split in half.
Uh-huh.
But they were very luxurious. And if you sat on one end of it, it might tilt. But, you know, if you knew that, you didn't do it.
Right.
So, you know, there'd be mail in a little basket and stuff. It'd be about, 30, 40 letters for me, 30, 40 letters for Dino, 30, 40 letters for Jared, and 150 for Larry. And we kind of looked and opened them up. It was kind of a fun thing. We'd open them up, and, you know, and I thought, this is pretty cool. Look at Marty, I love, you know, dear Marty, you know. And I look at the letters, and they're kind of weird. Sometimes about one out of every ten of them, they say something like, go to hell, I'm going to watch you, I'll be on your every step. Don't turn around, there'll be a knife in your neck.
Well, wasn't,
you know,
there...
stuff like that. And they go, oh, well, hell, you know. Then I realized, thank God we don't have a lot of those.
Yeah.
And then I realized one day when I'm walking around, I'm looking and seeing the corner, there's like two huge U.S. mail sacks. And I'm going, shit, these guys aren't even giving us our money. And I look at them, and it is like covered in this mail that obviously from the outside they could tell, you know, the bastard New Monkees, two, you know, idiot New Monkees. I hate, you know, and it's literally written all over it with pictures of knives and guns and, you know, all this stuff. And that's when the real fact came out to me that there's a vast majority of people out there that don't like us. And it hit me kind of like in my stomach, kind of like the first time a girl says, you know, says that you're dating, says, I don't want to see you anymore. You know, when that happens and that kind of feeling, you're the ultimate form of rejection, and you're looking at it in the physical form of hundreds of rejections. And you go, oh, my God. It wouldn't have bothered me. Because they, you know, they were protecting me with this little dosage of one every, you know, 5-10 letters or whatever. But here was a sacks and sacks that obviously were hate mail, because on the outside of the envelopes were written death to the New Monkees, this and that and all this. And it was really, really odd, and all a sinking feeling. And I was looking around saying, why hasn't anybody told us this shit? You know? So,
wow.
Yeah, that was the first time I realized that things were, you know, I knew the show wasn't funny. I knew the album might not do well. I knew it was called The New Monkees. But, gee, even a stupid idiot like me was not even connecting the dots.
Wow.
So, you know, once you connect the dots, you realize, uh-oh.
Every time I call her.
you've got the three producers. You got Steve Blauner, Robert Rafelson, and Bert Schneider. How did they treat you at the beginning of this process?
I know from history because I knew a lot about the Monkees. I read all about them and read as much as I could. But I knew that they really didn't get paid very much, and I know that we were paid a lot better. We weren't paid great in terms of television scale, in terms of what was going on in 1986, 87, but we were paid far better than most. So I knew that right then and there, just, you know, pay is respect in America, right?
Right.
So as far as pay was concerned, I was being respected. So that was something that I thought was different. I only saw Bert Schneider one, two, three times maybe, and Rafelson maybe the same amount. Saw Blauner all the time. He was the operative head. And so Rafelson just directed a couple of pieces that he did, and Schneider was there whenever we had scheduled a live show with lots of girls.
The general attitude, as you were saying, is that this is going to be big. You guys are great. We love you guys. This is going to happen, right?
Every damn person around us, and we're getting the five-star treatment. You know, I mean, it's nonstop. It's like it's absolutely nonstop, 24 hours a day. Well, literally 16 hours a day. Let's make it like that. Uh-huh. 16 hours a day of nonstop New Monkey World, and it's just, you know, and. Yeah, there were things that kind of made me kind of wonder about the show, the obvious cracks in it, which you probably will ask me in a little bit about what,
yes,
you know, downfall of what my thinking was.
Right. This time they wanted to make sure that you guys could play your own instruments. They didn't want to go through all that stuff again. So they made sure that they picked four guys that knew how to play. And you had been in the Wigs, and the other fellow that was the primary lead vocalist, I would say, is Larry Saltis. He is from Akron, Ohio.
He was only 17. He was adept at guitar playing, and he had a good voice.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about it. That, you know, I mean, and Dino could really play drums, and, you know, he was a good garage band type quality drummer, which is to mean that he kept a really good beat, and he had a really good energy to him.
Uh-huh.
We did have the nucleus of a real band that really could play, and
right.
That was, you know, that was something that I think indeed was different, yes. But not to take it away from the original guys, they all could play too. I mean, is that in reality, the reason, it wasn't whether or not you could play or not, it was the fact that you could back it up immediately, and, you know, they would have had, but here's where we get into muddy things about it. I don't necessarily agree with the whole could play it, your own instruments or not, because it's such an idiotic thing to expect somebody to do a television show and videos to the songs, and then to go play the songs, and then to sing on the songs, and then do this. It's like, yeah, we got four guys together who all play really great together, and we got them, and they all do really great, and they're going to be doing their album. The TV show won't be coming out for another 6 months. We're sorry. That's not going to work that way.
Very strange. What was it like recording the album?
I mean, I got to play and with some of the best people in the business of the day. You know, it was what was, you know, our version of the Brill Building. The best writers of the 80s were involved with the show. And I picked the songs that I wanted to sing. I'm sure that was different than the original guys. The three songs that I sang on the album were ones that, you know, one of them I had done in the Wigs, and I wanted to do. Another one was from my friends, the Elvis Brothers.
Thank you.
presented to me by Matt Fassberg, one of the producers of the show, was the Tom Cochran song, which I loved already.
Yes.
And, you know, those were the... On the Tom Cochran song, I got to work with Steve Barry. Now, Steve Barry was a hero of mine. He was one of, like, the underground guys of the 60s who played with this guy who was a partner with P.F. Sloan. Uh-huh. And P.F. Sloan and Steve Barry wrote tons of songs. I mean, from Eve of Destruction to Secret Agent Man to, I mean, You Baby to a ton of great, great material from the 60s for many stars. And Steve Barry is producing me, and I found that to be just awesome. So, and Tony Peluso, I think, who's since passed away, he was amazingly, he was arranger and producer for the Carpenters,
uh-huh.
which take them or leave them, if you're a fan or not, those guys were the real deal for a while. You know, they really felt how they felt with the music that they did, and their productions were amazing. You know,
absolutely.
Their records were amazing sounding. So I was working with those kinds of people, and I found it to be the best part of the whole experience was to be able to record that album.
It also seemed like they wanted to make sure that you guys were involved in the album and the process. It seemed like they wanted to make you happier than the first experiment, shall we say.
I think that statement that you just made has two sides to it. I agree that they probably wanted us to be happier, but I also agree that they felt that they could have made the first guys happier, maybe didn't, but at the same time, they didn't think of them as being much more than just four guys that were like, they were made rock stars. They had this, they thought that they made them, you know?
Right.
Bob and Bert, you know, basically thought that they made those guys, and that's okay, you know, that's fine. But the truth was is that those four guys really were on their own without Bob and Bert, without anybody, turned into being something that was whole and totally their own thing, and nobody could take that as their credit, you know?
Absolutely. Did you hear or see the clip of the Monkees on the Today Show where they talked about the attempt to do the new Monkees?
And yes. I've given everything. Anything that has to do with either new Monkees or Monkees, I'm always sent stuff. And when Mickey rolls on the ground, you know who you are?
Yes, I'm going to play a little bit of that right now.
You know, wait a minute. Look what I saw in the newspaper this morning.
Uh-oh.
Headline, new set of Monkees to swing into syndication. Columbia Pictures TV is embarking on a national search for four actors to play the
Peter
new...
Peter Clark, Davy Jones, Mickey DeHaan.
The new Monkees!
Yeah.
Why do they need new Monkees?
I'm going to go for
good
your
Good point. Mickey, I'm going for your part.
Yeah, I always wanted to be Peter.
That's incredible.
I don't know why
it's not any
I always wanted to play the drums.
But really, I mean, does somebody really think that it was
idea.
The concept that was successful?
Yes,
and not
somebody
the
does.
Individual?
How do we know who it is? And you're such an idiot. I'm sorry.
Well, we know who you are.
Oh, sorry.
It's weird because there's a tension, and Mickey is trying to be as humorous about it at the same time, but these guys were not very happy. When you saw this or heard this, was this around the time that the album had been coming out or was ready to come out? When did you become aware of this clip?
Oh, I wasn't just aware of the clip. I was aware of the lawsuit that they were threatening, and I was aware of this whole thing. That's their deal. That's their livelihood. That's
absolutely
theirs. And when somebody comes in and says, look, we're going to, you know, for all intents and purposes, we're going to try to put you guys out to the farm, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel that, you're going to defend what you feel you need to defend. And I had no problem with, and I never had a problem with them trying to defend it. I was still on board thinking, even, you know, I still thought we changed the name on the second album. It's not like it's called the New Monkees. I mean, I know we have a TV show and an album and all that, and we do songs and we go to the New Monkees, but we're going to change it. We'll change it.
When you found out that they were going with the name the New Monkees after you had been told that we're not going to go with it, did your gut sink? Did you think, like, this is not a good step?
My gut told me something was wrong when my mother said, which one are you going to be?
Oh.
Now, when my mother said that, I said, you know, okay, it's a sunken ship. It was almost as sunken as that at that point, and it got pretty dark towards the last few episodes when we were filming. the show wasn't very good, and we thought it just felt unfunny, and it was unfunny. It wasn't well written. It wasn't well done. There were bright moments, but the bright moments were not worth going to search out for in a lot of ways.
Right.
If you are a New Monkees fan and you want to find the funny stuff, that's fine. But there was nothing for Monkees fans to find appealing about watching that show. And I feel on that basis that they had a chance to be able to do that, but didn't really attempt as hard as they could. They first deal when the show was out, they wanted it to be kind of a modern college type show. I mean, literally a college type show. So they, you know, the average script price at that point was, I mean, somewhere between $8,500 and $12,000 for a 1 half-hour script, comedy script. And I believe that the show was offering $2,000 for a half-hour script. So the only people that were really kind of answering this stuff were people from USC Film School,
uh-huh,
and UCLA. So we were getting those kinds of scripts, and that reflects in the quality. You get what you pay for. And when we were sitting there reading this stuff, we would make up stuff that would be funny, and people would say, you've got to stick to the script. So I felt like hand and bound, chained.
So it's like, we want you to do improv, just don't do it.
Oh, certainly. And you know what's really strange about that is that we trained with this guy from ABC Television Workshop named Bill Hudnut. And Bill Hudnut was a darling of a guy. He was really great, and we worked for, 6 months? 3 days, 4 or 5 days a week, something like that, before the show, every day at the Television Workshop. And the four of us worked doing nothing but improv every single day. Every single day, improv, 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 improv. And we got pretty damn good at it. When we got to the show, we were handed scripts, and they said, okay, now let's do the script, and please keep to the script.
Wow.
What the hell was that about?
That's weird. She makes it hard, she makes it so hard to look the other way. The way she moves is magic, I can't turn away. Along the way, I want to point out bullet points of things that could have altered the destiny of the quote-unquote New Monkees, that could have changed everything. Point number one, a new name. And you could have been anything, but just, for example, there's a TV show called Big Time Rush where they pretty much followed the Monkees template, but they didn't call themselves the New Monkees.
I did watch that, and I agree with you. It is similar.
Yeah, it's pretty much the Monkees for 2012 or whatever. A second point that could have altered things was to have a concept other than the fact that you guys seem to be trapped in a large mansion with a butler named Manford. A mansion that seemed multi-dimensional, and there was no real grasp. Like, for example, you couldn't, the Monkees would do things like where they would go out on the beach and see a guy who had to, you know, sell his hot dog cart or something. And the Monkees would then rally and put on a concert and raise money to keep the guy's hot dog cart running. Like, that could have been a script. You guys instead met the Pope. That's a literal episode. The New Monkees meet the Pope.
Jeez, look at all this Pope stuff. We even got a remote control model of the Pope Mobile.
We got buttons, Pope ketchup and mustard,
Pope Nobles.
Hey guys, take a look at this. It's Pope mouthwash.
I bet that tastes good.
You guys,
all kidding aside, I think it's pretty cool that we have Pope John Paul with us in town.
Yeah, if we had Pope George Ringo, we could have a reunion.
It was very strange, and you had this diner within this big mansion. Now, were you guys supposed to be rich?
Yeah, you see, you're asking questions.
It's weird because
I have the Bible somewhere, and I believe within the Bible, all the answers are there. And when you read the Bible, you think this is...
Of course, you're referring to the show Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah, not
and
the show
Bible would have all those answers.
Yeah.
This was written before pot was legal.
But it always seemed like the concept of the show is that you were already a successful band, and you were trapped inside of this mansion. It almost seems like the producers skipped the TV show of the Monkees and went right to Head, where they were trapped inside of a big black box.
You know, I never thought of that.
You guys were trapped in a big mansion that you couldn't get out of. It's like fame was your trap. But there was always these weird interdimensional rooms where you would go in, and one would be like, there'd be a kitchen with a waitress and a diner, and then you would open up and there'd be like big eyeballs and weird things. And the show had a resemblance more than it did to the monkeys to Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Well, that's the era.
Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, you even shared guest stars with the Del Rubio triplets.
Ah.
So, it was a very weird, weird thing. And of course, you had the professor.
Ken, I love it when you say weird.
Oh, well, I say it a lot. You should see my mail. Anyway. But Russell Johnson, the professor from Gilligan's Island, he was on there as the professor, right?
Wait a minute. You actually watch these shows?
I've seen some of them, yes.
You're watching the shows. You're watching the New Monkeys. I mean, you should be. I mean, there is actually a Medal of Freedom that it comes around when you stop watching them.
Well, I have that to look forward to. But it was kind of strange because it seemed like you were trapped inside your own black box, and they never let you guys out. And I think that was one of the things that really hurt the show. I know that when I tried to watch it back in the day when it came out, I was like, well, let's check this out. And I remember the part where you see the monkeys on the screen, like there's this TV you guys find, and there's the monkeys doing Last Train to Clarksville, and one of you like says, Daddy, or something like that.
Look!
Yeah, you still haven't gotten your Medal of Freedom.
No, I haven't. I remember thinking, well, okay, that's cool, but then it just seemed like I was watching a weird show that belonged more on MTV than it did on regular TV. Because the videos didn't seem any different than what was on MTV at the time.
Well, MTV is another whole thing, see. When we were shooting that show, there was all the intentions of being shown on MTV.
Uh-huh.
As we all know, the MTV debacle with the original Monkees then spread to the New Monkees as kind of like where MTV was pretty much responsible for the
resurgence.
For the resurgence in all of it. They somehow just closed the door and said, we don't really want to do this anymore. They, doing all those videos and having that show placed inside that house, I thought at the end of the whole thing, I thought that that whole house thing could have been one or two episodes.
Uh-huh.
You know, it could have been a two-parter where
right.
we get stuck inside this house where there's no way to get out and we go through this adventure. When you're talking about what could have made the show different, calling it something else, they would have said from the producers and creators of the Monkees. And so whatever it would have been called, we would have been compared to the Monkees, and there's no way. It was like, you know, it had been, what, 30 years since the Marx Brothers?
Right.
I mean, I don't know how well the Monkees would have done if they would have come out 2 years after the last Marx Brothers film.
Right.
You know, because they were. They were a lot like the slapstick version of that, wholly different than that, but the comparisons would be unfair. Funny, this was, what, 20 years after the Monkees were on the air? 20 mm-hmm. years. And think of the staying power. That's how good that fucking show was. Excuse
Absolutely.
Me. That show was so good that I don't know how anybody, you know, they would have said from the producers and of the Monkees, here is the Blast Zone,
mm-hmm.
the newest band in the world.
Right.
Yeah, but they're not anything. And they said, no, not, you know, we would have been compared to the original show, no matter what.
You know, it's one thing to be compared. It's another thing to be snuffed in your cradle, if you will.
Sure. I hate that feeling.
Mm-hmm. No, I never like it. Happens once a day to me. I don't like it. You were talking about how you guys were in this bubble of fame where it seemed like you're in production on all these TV shows, your album's ready to come out, everybody's loving everything. The show airs, you're on 16 Magazine. In the same magazine with the original Monkees, by the way. That had to be kind of strange.
We were in a lot of those.
Yeah. But it's weird because you would, like, look at one page.
The Monkees had, you know, pulling power because basically, in a lot of ways, the Monkees were a huge huge, huge money earner for those all 16 Teen Beat, Tiger Beat. Those, they put the Monkees on and they got 16 times the sales that they went on other magazines. But I could not figure the life out of me why Kirk Cameron and all these guys and Bon Jovi and this and that were on the cover of this with the Monkees. I couldn't figure out why the Monkees were on the cover of 16 magazine in 1987. It just didn't make sense to me, you know?
Well,
kind of like seeing Paul McCartney singing She's Just 17, You Know What I Mean, and he's 71. It's just something for me just feels wrong.
Yeah, I dig it.
So, and I saw some magazines. I didn't realize we were in the same magazines, but I know we were in a lot of them.
Yeah. Well, the weird thing of it is that when a girl would sit and watch Davey or Mickey or Mike or Peter, and they'd see Davey's eyes twinkle for the first time on MTV or Nickelodeon,
right,
that's her Davey Jones. And
well,
that's true.
You're right. They were looking at trying to, yeah.
So, you know, it worked once. Why not do it again, you know? You know, that explains. But it was kind of weird because you guys would be on one page, you in your kilt, like Nesmith had his hat, you were in your kilt. Did you, was that something you were running around Chicago in a kilt prior to this, or?
No. isn't it going to be cool? I can now wear my kilt on my TV show.
Yeah. So whose idea was the kilt?
You know,
at least they didn't call you kilt head.
Sometime in an interview.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was saying some interests, you know, like this soft furry things, you know, planetary objects, kilts. And I think that on the strength of that, they made the kilt for me. I'm honestly thinking that I just wrote it down as an interest on one of those production meet and greets with the people in the production, and Susan Nininger went and bought one, and then they kept on making them for me. I never said no to it, you know. It kind of had a look, and I do have Scottish blood, so
it all works out. But it's kind of weird to think about it like that, though. You know that you know, one day you say, well, it's kind of like what George Harrison did. When they would ask him what his favorite candy was, he would say jelly babies, and over in the States, all we have is jelly beans. Jelly babies are soft. Jelly beans are like bullets when you...
They're projectiles.
Yeah. So when you open up a bag from, you know, 60 feet away and hurl them, and just p-ting-ting, p-ting-ting, p-ting, you know, so... But at least they didn't call you kilt head or something, like wool hat, so...
Oh, sure, yeah. I believe... Monkees fans call me asshole. Was it ass? I think that's what it was. Just, you know, if you consider 87, that was strong. It was a strong word, and you know, not so much now.
Now, you were saying at one point that there was another name that you guys could have picked that maybe could have caused you less trouble. Do you remember that joke you told me?
You know, at one point, there was a thing where I would sit there and look at the other guys and, you know, just off the cuff would say, you know, maybe the new Beatles, maybe we'll get less hate mail if we new Beatles. You know, and if you think about it, and it's kind of a good idea, the new Beatles.
There you go.
Yeah.
So
the new Archies.
There you go. Now, nobody's going to fight you for that one. Did you find out that the Monkees were suing? At what point in the process do you remember being aware of that?
I was told of that by somebody that was in production saying, says, well, what do you guys, you know, just something off the cuff, was eating lunch or something. Says, yeah, what do you think about Mickey, Peter, and Davey, you know, suing the show? And I suing the show. And he says, yeah, that's the first time I heard it, that they were suing our show. And of course, that wasn't it, but that's what you know,
that's the
message
the around
the people gets to by the time it gets to the last person, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were actually trying, they were suing to try to keep the name, because I think it was Burt had the rights to the name or something. Was in any case, it was not a pretty picture, because our whole thing all the time was hoping that the monkeys would give us a blessing. And you know, here's the deal with that, and I've always felt this way, that if Bob and Burt and Steve Blauner had done it the right way and known about how to deal with this stuff, is that the monkeys should have been a continuation series forever. Problem, you know, if you take into one theory that there could have been the monkeys, and then as they got older, they became the show's managers, and then the new guys, it would be like a Menudo thing, and they would continue on. Now, that's speaking as a business thing. They would have never, but the original monkeys were so good, that was, how could you replace them one by one, you know?
Right. But even if they would have done another name, and at one point they were talking about having Mickey direct some of the episodes, correct?
Yeah, he was asked to do, he told me to my face that, you know, yeah, I was supposed to direct the pilot. They offered to direct the pilot, but, you know, I immediately said, you know, I immediately thought about, you know, how that would have been great for us, but what really was it in it, what's in it for him? And the other guys would probably you know, castrate him for it.
Right. But at one point they were mentioning that they were going to try to get the other guys to do cameo appearances in the show and surprise guest spots. So you're thinking, well, this is going to be cool. This is all going to work.
Yeah.
And then you find these stacks of bundles of mail. You find out that the original monkeys are suing. And at one point you go, like, what have we gotten ourselves into, guys?
Well, sure. When we went to New York and we did the Good Morning America, and then we had Larry King radio show, uh-huh. And then after that we were going to Philadelphia, there were some real viable and palpable death threats against us. We had to have a police escort from New York to Philly, and it was a little bit weird when we got out. The police are there looking around, they're securing for this radio show. Yeah, at a certain time, when it gets really dark and you're starting to think this has gone beyond, you're basically trying to do what you want to do, which is trying to put out the best show as possible, and you're just promoting it. None of us are professional actors, and you know, and I kept kind of trying to keep it light by you know keeping on saying maybe the death threats were meant for Joan London.
The host of Good Morning America.
Maybe yeah. They've got it wrong. They've just dialed wrong, and they've got us up by mistake, you know, so, yeah. Calling your words are a prison, but I don't want out. Every time I go to walk out that door, I find myself coming back for more. Carly, girl, what you do to me? Carly. The album comes out, and it does adequately, shall we say. It's not platinum album or anything, but oh, it went copper.
It went copper in Yugoslavia, right?
Madagascar.
Madagascar. You did mention that you thought that there was still some marketing potential with the new monkeys. You were thinking about getting the other guys and putting out a product, correct?
Sure. Always thinking about that. It's, you know, it's a very, very small, limited market, but it turns out that we did the new monkeys thing turned out to be a big, huge balloon that turned into a little cult item, you know? Mm-hmm. So there are people that are really interested in the fans of the new monkeys. I mean, I continuously ask them if they're well, you know, if there's anything they need. I think that, you know, I love these new monkeys fans, even though most of them are on an IV drip. And I think that they're crazier than we are for having the show. And there's always room for doing a couple of songs, but you know, at this stage of the game, it wouldn't be for anything more than just our fan base. Mm-hmm. Which, if you're out there, Fred and Hank and Lucy, I'd like to say hi to everybody, all the fans, all of them.
Listen, I actually like your album, and there are people right now who are like, Ken, say it isn't so. But it's not a bad album. It's just an album of its time. It's the 80s.
As a production of its time, it was one of the better albums. With it had top flight production for its day.
Yes, yes.
I'd like to offer to all those Monkey fans out there that becoming available, if there is enough demand, which I'm sure there would be, if the new Monkey dartboard comes with all of our faces on the front, and then Bert Schneider, Bob Ravelson, and Steve Blauner on the back. So you've got your ability to be able to hit the production side or the talent side, and the dartboard is a $19, and it's Hasbro.
That's excellent.
Edit that into something decent.
I will. So when did you start realizing that there would be no New Monkees Season 2, and how did you get...
I just actually found out. Just 5 minutes ago, I got a call.
You've been waiting for Strapert to get back to you. And they finally said, please, don't. The company doesn't exist. Don't bother us.
It doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Do you want to announce that there won't be an official second season?
You can announce it. You can announce it, Ken. I mean, this is
a Zilch exclusive.
Out there, but, you know, I've been waiting for the final word, but, you know, it took a while.
Do you ever hope to get out of that mansion?
Actually, it's not a bad place to be. Yeah. There was no way that I thought that was actually very good. But, you know, I didn't know because I'd never done a television
show. You were a musician.
I'd never done a bad one before.
Yeah, you never done a
good one.
Yeah, there you go. So how were you treated by Strabert? How did it go from, you guys are the greatest things since sliced bread, we love you, baby, to get out and don't let the door hit you?
Well, that actually took a while. We were selected in 1986,
mm-hmm.
in the summer or fall of 1986, something like that, and the show didn't start shooting until the next summer. So there was a long time there where this was all the, you know, it's going to be great, it's going to be fine, it's going to be great, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It took probably about a year and a half, a little more than a year and 3 months or something like that before things started going downhill. And when they went downhill, oh, what a beautiful sight. It was almost prettier than anything else. You know that pretty blue flame that you get off the burner?
Mm-hmm.
You could see that kind of like heading that way towards the show production. And then it got to be when the last days, I mean, there was lots of things that were, like for the last show that we were shooting, there was a lot of stuff that was missing from the set.
Wow.
And so it's kind of weird, but I went out there one evening and I noticed there was like 10 or 15 people there, and the show is dark and we're not filming, and there's people with like trucks and they're backed up and they're taking crap away, and it was just a nut stuff. I mean, you know, I had gotten a person that was a friend of mine, of his first job in L.A. at Studio Instrument Rentals, and then I got him a production assistant job at the New Monkees. After the show's over, about 2 weeks after the show's over, I get a knock at my apartment door, and part of the deal was that we got to have all this studio gear and guitars and basses and stuff because we were all sponsored. He comes to my door. My friend says, I got to come get the stuff. I went, really? Me, the guy that's gotten you all these jobs, you're coming to get my stuff? Says, yeah. And then it turned out that all the stuff that was, all the guitars, all the PA equipment, all the lighting, all the stuff, it was auctioned off a week later to industry people, and the four of us guys weren't even told about it, not even given an opportunity to buy our sponsored gear back. I mean, stuff like my guitars were taken, the ones that you see on the TV show, sold for, you know, pennies on the dollar. That part of it really started to sting. That really hurt.
Wow.
I had no idea why they would tell us this, why they wouldn't tell us to give us an opportunity, but, you know, everything was taken. Very, very odd, very, very dark times. I mean, in Hollywood and in TV shows, what's really strange is that when you do a movie or TV show, people become the best of friends, and then there's a lot of people that when the show is over, they just move on and make best of friends to where they're going next. Actors are very, very kind of like chameleons in this regard, lots of them, many of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the Monkees and the New Monkees are a little bit different, because we were cast as friends, and they cast people that had a chemistry together. Well, so no matter what happens, whenever the New Monkees, likes them or not, whenever we're in a room together, there's a chemistry there because it was made that way. They saw it and they cast it well. And there is a certain really, really brotherly love that we have that comes from, you know, all these times that we had together. And, you know, and I think that that's the reason why the Monkees would stick together, and that, you know, the basic thing above it is that it's a business and they make their money, it's their livelihood, but they also really love each other.
Wow, that is awesome. I did not realize to the extent that Bob and Bert were involved in it. And then basically they wanted to cash in on the resurgence.
Right.
And for people to be negative with you, you also have to like aim that at them.
Oh, well, that's...
Since they are the creators.
They were the ones that made money on it.
Right. You know, and then there's things like, for example, you were telling me, I forget which one of the bees, either Bob or Bert,
right,
was talking to you and said something like, you'll never be as good as them. There's instances where, like, for example, on the Head Blu-ray, there's an interview where one of the, either Bob or Bert, is telling, you know, on the set of Head, they're playing, like, some weird music that Davey just was not into. And he's like, your music will never be as good as this. And it's like, what kind of codependent weirdo does that sort of thing with people that he's working with?
Right, and you know, it was kind of strange, you know, when I was talking to Mickey, and he's going, well, what's going on? And the Monkey says, well, you agree, and he said, well, Bert died, says, but you know that. And he's like, and it was one of those things, well, where, you know, we're sharing a death of a father, you know, but I'm the unadopted son.
Uh-huh.
So it's strange, because in that world, yes, but with all things Bert and Bob, and Flounder, we're all shared, you know. We had the same experiences, except for two of them. And one was success, and the other one was, I believe, quality. We just weren't as good. It could have been much, much better.
Have you talked to Davey and Peter and Mike or any of the other ones? I know you talked to Mickey. How did that all
come about?
Talked
to Mickey. I didn't ever meet Davey. I met rest in peace, Davey. And I was asked to audition for a show that was on a cable outlet. I don't remember the name of the show. I don't remember the name of the cable outlet. And it was an open casting call. They were looking for a guitar player. So I went there and showed up for this thing and sat down and looked to my right, and there's Peter Tork sitting next to me. He goes, hi.
Wow.
I go, hi. So we started talking, and, you know, we got along fine. And he says, you know, what was really cool, something I do in my blues band, is this version of Lady Madonna, it's a perfect blues song. And I go, ah. And he says, well, teach it to me. So we started learning. I learned it and then started playing. And he goes, yeah, you got it down. And so there's somewhere this lady behind there was taking film of this, and a video, I mean, and, you know, somewhere around in Los Angeles, there's a lady that's got a video of Peter Tork and Marty Ross doing Lady Madonna, which would be an awesome video.
Yeah.
Because it was good. Then I met Michael at a function in Beverly Hills at the BMI Television and Film Awards, and he was sitting with Mike Love. And so there's Mike Love and Mike sitting there, and I just started talking for a while and talked to both of them, and we got along fine, and Mike said, let's take a picture. So I took a picture with him, and Mike Love was off in the bathroom. So, you know, last time I saw Mickey, I found out just exactly how hard it is for some and others. And this woman had invited us over to Harold Bronson's house. I don't know if I should be mentioning all these names, but it's fun to.
Okay.
And Harold's had a rhino.
Uh-huh.
So Rhino owns the name of the Monkees, apparently now, or their albums. And went over there and was, because I know Bobby Hart, and they were, Rachel Lickman was, and Andrew Sandoval were doing a thing in And Mickey was there with his wife, and Mickey comes over and looks at me and says, "Good evening, nice to see you." And but he just can't be friends. It's really tough. I mean, we talk later, and it's tough for that. He says it's very tough to be friends. He says because it's he really tried his hardest to become friends, but it's just hard for him. So I understand that completely. But his wife was really funny that night because she kept on looking at me saying, she goes, "I know your face from somewhere." And I go, "Oh, no, you don't." I go, no, you don't. She said, "No, I do. I know you from somewhere." And so even in the group photo where we took, everybody was there, including Paul Revere narrator's guy and his wife. And Mickey's got his hat below his head, but below his brim, because he doesn't want to be seen in the same shot with me. That is taken twice, and it's like the brim's even farther down the second time. We're like, wait, when we saw that picture, going, wait a minute. Yeah, that's Mickey Dolenz there, the one with the hat over his head. And it's
did you ever get a chance to tell Mickey that, like, hey, I was a huge fan?
Oh, I did. Yeah, absolutely. I told him. We both had one-on-one time in the hallway looking at Harold Bronson's paintings that he had in his hallway, and he, you know, Mickey felt terrible about the death threats because he never knew about them. So, you know, that's something. And I said, you know, I was told by Bert Schneider that I was never going to be as good as the Monkees, no matter what I did. And that's kind of like being told that it's like being told from your father that you're just not as good as the other kids.
Yeah.
I understand if the guys, you know, the last time I saw Peter Tork before that was at the re-premiere of Head. And a guy that was a friend of mine brought me there to the Egyptian Theater, and I was sitting in the aisle when the movie got over. When the movie was over, there was about seven or eight people that were waiting in line. The lights come up, and they're waiting in line. I'm looking at this. Oh Jesus! And there's these people waiting in line to get an autograph from me. And I'm thinking, this is like, you know, bring your rocks. I'm right over here. Put the spotlight on me, and, you know, people can put the arrow through me. Because I felt there was a definite darkness there. So anytime I'm around a monkey thing, it's like it's really turns my emotions around, because I'm so in love with the band and I love the music, and yet I'm ostracized from it by fans. Very difficult to go and try to be a part of it. You know, people say, "We're going to the Monkees convention." I can't go. Somebody, you know, it's just that I'm not welcome. So
yeah, but
I'm like I believe you pointed this out earlier, that I'm one of the eight original and probably last people that can have Monkees spelled Monkees officially sanctioned by Bob Raisfeldson and Bert Schneider.
Yes.
And yet really on the outside. So, you know, it's and some people say, and for good reasons. And if the reasons are good, that's fine. But to be part of it isn't that much fun.
Right. So if you guys put another album out, maybe call it The Bastard Monkees?
That's right. That's what it'll be called. Yeah. We have the copyright to that, damn it.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Marty, you were a highlight of that show. Your sense of humor shined through. It's a shame that you were not given a better shot with this, and I am sorry that you were treated, I feel, kind of shabbily by Strabert, just as the original guys were treated bad by Raybert.
I don't hold any grudge against those guys. I mean, if it would have worked somehow, everything would have been fine, but, you know, the thing was is that I never wanted to take the place of the Monkees, and I don't even have the talent to do that. I'm not even close. So the thing is, really, really, for me, is that now that the new Monkees are a footnote, the Monkees are all, you know, for me, have always been in the same place that they should be. And it's really strange that, you know, that people would still have this animosity. But
I think that there's a book in all of this, you know, I Was a Monkey.
Yeah. Or a documentary. It'd be fun. You know, the documentary would be kind of like, you know, Hollywood Babylon. I mean,
yeah.
It really is kind of like, kid, we're going to make you a star kind of thing.
Actually, a documentary would be kick-ass to get all you guys together and,
you know,
tell
John
the story.
John Waters wanted to do a documentary until he found out Larry Saltis was straight. I think that might have...
That messed everything up.
Testing, 1, 2. Testing. Siblings. No.
Well, Marty, it's been a blast having you on the show. I hope that Monkey fans give this episode a shot, because you guys went through the same thing, minus the great success, but you were kind of treated the same way that the monkeys were. But you guys were... But seriously, you guys...
You reminded me of this. It's like the scab. You picked the scab, Ken.
I'm sorry. But Marty, I think that you're a great guy, and I think that you guys do have a story to tell, and it's a story about how Hollywood, chews someone up and spits them out, and I think it sucks. But on the other hand, you've led a great life on your own.
Yeah.
And
I have a wife, and I have a wonderful daughter. I've done music for over 300 episodes of television. I've done about 10, 12 movies, or done songs, written about 600 songs. Of about 19 of them are pretty good. And, it's okay. I'm fine and happy with it. But I still believe that it's, for me, there is unfinished business there. And I don't know what the business will be, but there'll be something there that'll be interesting. And the story could be told in a way that would make everybody laugh and cry. And I think at the end of the movie, if we're catapulted into a side of a cement wall, I believe that would probably appease most members of the Monkey fan club.
Well, I would love to see a documentary about this story. To me, like I said, it's like they went right from, they skipped over the TV show and went right to head where you guys were in your own black box. And it's kind of sad. I feel that you got treated bad and by some people that may be listening to this show and by some of the people who helped create the original Monkees. And it's sad that they put the original Monkees in a bind, and it's sad that they did not treat you guys better as well. It just could have been so different.
It could have been so different. Yep. Yeah, I agree.
Something that made the new Monkees experience really worth it for you.
You never know. You can sit there and feel terrible about something that you're about your own life. You can feel depressed about it, and then something happens to turn you around, and you can never know when or how or what can happen to make your life better or worse. You just kind of have to sail on that emotional roller coaster and expect that what goes up must come down. You know, the thing about it is that I know how depression can be such a debilitating thing to have to deal with. One of the things was, as I was feeling with the new Monkees, the show wasn't going well. I'd found out that there was hate mail, people weren't liking us, this and that, and it's nothing worse than to be in a depression on a national level. So what's weird about that is I got a letter from this girl, and this girl was a fan. She says, "I've been a fan for a long time." She says, "But admittedly, I've been very depressed, and I got so in a desperate state that I tried to kill myself. As I was preparing to kill myself on the television, your television show came on. But then you did a song called Affection, and you did a song called Affection in a Warehouse, and those words spoke to me, and I decided to check myself into a rehab." And getting letters like that, I still have that letter. And getting a letter like that can turn everything around. It's like sit there and think, well, everybody can hate this show, and everybody can not like it, and I can sit there and think and wish all of my life that this could be better and this could have turned out differently. But this person's life was changed because of something I did, and it affected her. And it affected her in such a positive way that everything that turned out about the show and all the you know, hate mail and this and that and people coming up to you and saying, oh, I don't like you guys, which one is you, and why did you have to do that? All those things just disappear because you feel, my God, that's really the bottom line of what life is about, is helping each other. And we did. And in that particular episode, at that particular time, reached out to somebody and they looked at it and they took that information and they made it a better place for themselves. And I'll never, ever feel bad about the show as long as that one person and her story.
Well, that's the thing. None of us realize what all we can do to make a difference in someone's life. So out of the whole New Monkeys experience, at least, if nothing else, that's definitely cool.
No, absolutely. It would never occur to me to think of, when I think of that show, that's right there at the top of it.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope that we do some justice to you guys.
Ooh, nice. That's a tie-in to a Musk Monkeys album, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't mean for it to be, but I guess it is.
There you go. All right, Ken, thanks a lot.
And listen, I'm really glad that you're still a Monkees fan.
Of course.
Because, you know, a lot of people could have been like, how are the other guys doing, by the way?
This is kind of strange. You know, they say that if we would have had Scandal in our band, it could have helped us, but we're not scandalous, so... Mm-hmm. The thing that's kind of entertaining about this is that, think about this. Dino, Jared, Larry, and Marty all have been married just once, all have children, all have steady jobs, all are working within the community at various whatever they do, and it's just kind of a strange thing. No divorces, no this, none of that, no drug busts, nothing like that. You know, we were, we and are, a very, you know, stable people, and to the extent of how Hollywood determines stable is.
Right.
Jared works in film production, and Dino works in film production, and Larry is a builds houses in Ohio.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so, you know, we're all married and have children, and always been married once. That's kind of a weird thing in Hollywood.
It's a weird thing anywhere nowadays.
What happened? What went wrong? All right, Ken, you have a good time.
All right, Mark.
And make sure that everything is good and buttoned up, and I really appreciate the fact that you wanted to give me an interview. I don't talk a lot about the New Monkees, but it was awfully nice to talk about these stories. It brings it back to me. You did a great interview. You're well on your way to a life of misery.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Did you check out the show at all?
Yeah.
Really? What'd you think of it?
I think it's pieced well together, and I think it's done right. You know, it's as far as I can tell, it sounds like a radio show.
Well, there you go. I guess we've made it.
Yeah. All right. Take care, buddy.
All right. Well, I'm going to go check out an episode called The New Monkees Meet the Pope. You want to join me?
Okay, sure. I'll go with you there, and... remember the empty bags of popcorn, because I got to put mine over my head.
Okay. This show's about these guys that live in a mansion, and they're trapped, but they can't get out, but they can go anywhere, and they're a band.
Are they already rich?
Yeah, I think so, and they're a band already.
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit Monkees audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the Monkees or any of their members past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burke. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.
Hey, hi, how are you? My name's Marty Ross. I'm from the New Monkees on Zilch.
As weird as this is going to sound, prior to talking to you, the first night that we spoke on the phone, that magical night. I didn't realize, really.
yeah. Well.